Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
I know how dark minds can be, and don't listen to the... It's playing tricks on you. Your mind plays tricks on you. Hi guys, welcome back to the Just For Today podcast, where we dive deep into uncomfortable topics with no filters. My name is Adriana.
And I'm Kevin.
And today I figured we can talk a little bit about mental health.
Let's do it.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it is May. So I feel like I'm pretty open about my mental health struggles with depression. And do you want to kind of talk about what you struggle with mentally?
Sure. Where to begin? That is the question.
Let me take out the list.
Yeah. I guess, like, I'll be honest, like, I didn't really realize I struggled with mental health in any way until I was probably in my mid-20s.
Mm-hmm. So this was before marriage?
Before marriage, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, before marriage, and yeah, some things that had happened in my life really kind of came up, and I needed to go talk to somebody, and fortunately was given the resources to do that, and I think that really opened my eyes a lot with, like, what, I guess, just how I process things and how those events in my life, they impact each decision I make every day.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, the eye-opening part where I realized just, like, the dramatic impact that trauma has in your life. And it could just be, like, I don't know, like, how you end up driving to work that day or, like, I don't know.
The smallest.
Where you sit in a restaurant and all these things. So it comes down to, like, these very simple, seemingly insignificant decisions that are impacted by these historical events.
Yeah.
So that was, like, my first touch point, I guess, with the reality that I needed some help.
So what kind of made you realize that you needed the help? Like, what was going on that you were like, oh, okay, I'm not okay?
I think it was some behavioral stuff that I noticed in my life. I was more impulsive, and I was struggling to feel like I was in control. And it had just kind of come to a point, and I think I was fortunate to be around people who were able to help me at the time.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to therapy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's ultimately what I ended up doing. So I went to therapy, and I was probably in therapy for probably a year or so.
Yeah. And how did you feel, like, as a man going into therapy? Did you feel like, you know, sometimes there's a stigma around it. Like, men are fine. They don't need help. They're, like, you know, macho men. And
no. Mm-mm. I feel like, there is this, like, machismo.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. And I don't know, like, I was literally just thinking this in my head. I don't know if it's more of, like, a Hispanic thing. Obviously, you're not Hispanic. But, like, in the Hispanic culture, it's not really, like, men don't do that. Like, man, get over it.
It's more than just the Hispanic culture. It's more than that. Because I see it in, like,
everyone.
In media, you know. And in some of my peers at the time were... We're not comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And, like, I'll be honest, I was a first responder, and a lot of the guys I worked with, like, we saw and did horrible things every day.
Yeah, I feel like first responders are the ones that need therapy the most, you know? Like, yeah, not probably. In a mean way, but, like, you guys yeah. go through some shit.
Yeah.
Like, you see stuff.
Gnarly stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. So, there were guys who were like, oh, yeah, I go to a therapist, or,
yeah.
you know, I talk to somebody, or if we had a really bad call, they would basically bring in, like, a social worker to come and, like, facilitate a conversation with everybody to, like, decompress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those are usually, like, really,
really bad
calls, you know, like
yeah.
a baby or, you yeah. know, something that's pretty traumatic.
Yeah.
But outside of that, like, you're kind of on your own yeah. to figure things out. A lot of the guys were just like, yeah, just laugh it off. And we yeah. do, like, we would joke and tease each other and play jokes on each other all the time. But stuff like that just kind of kept the camaraderie going.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, though, because, I mean, I don't have, like, actual statistics or even anything to look it up, but, like, first responders and, like, police officers have, like, the highest rate of suicide.
Suicides, yeah.
And it makes sense. Like, you know, you deal with a lot of shit, but then you kind of just, ha ha ha, you know, like, you play it off like you're okay, but in your mind, you're...
You're absolutely right. Like, suicides are very high... with first responders and really anybody who's involved in, like, repetitive trauma.
Yeah.
You know, military and stuff like yeah. that. I guess not all members of the military are faced with that, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult, and I had always kind of thought that I didn't want to end up in the situation where I wanted to take my own life.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make sure that I was working on it and
yeah.
kind of getting it out. I just... It's just how I was thinking at the time.
Yeah.
And still today, but it's important to just talk it out.
Yeah. So that was in your mid-20s. Where are you at now?
I still struggle with mental health every day. And you know, like, it's, mm-hmm. it's a cyclical thing
mm-hmm.
and it kind of goes up and down. It's certainly a roller coaster. And there are periods of time where I feel like I'm really doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's periods of time where I feel like I'm really, really struggling.
Yeah.
And And often, like, I can't, in the moment, identify why. Like, nothing really has happened differently. But,
yeah.
you know, why is my brain not working?
What's triggering it, right?
Yeah, like, what's triggering it?
Yeah.
And sometimes those things are, like, easily identified.
Yeah.
You know, back home, when I lived in California, I could, like, be triggered just driving around because I would be like, okay, yeah, I went to a call on that corner where a cop was shot, mm-hmm. you know, or, like, somebody who I knew, you mm-hmm. know, somebody who I worked with every day was shot
yep.
right there. And we never caught the guy. Or, you know, oh, yeah, I saw a guy go through a windshield right here. Or, you know, a guy got hit by a Suburban at 45 miles an hour right here. And I did CPR on him on that line right there on the road.
And I feel like even if it's not things that you remember like that in your mind, like that come back, your body remembers. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, like even if you're not thinking it like, oh, this is where this guy was at, you know, but your body remembers all these things. And
totally.
It's so traumatizing. I agree also, like with California, I get this question all the time, like, oh, why would you move? Like you have your parents there and your family. And I'm like, I don't know how to explain it. Like that place is so...
This is the trauma.
Sorry, this dog's really comfortable. He's trying to open his legs.
Be a lady.
It's traumatizing, you know? Like,
yeah.
I moved away from there. Like, I've struggled with mental health for so freaking long. So long. And it got so bad to the point where I did try and take my life, and that was in California. And, you know, there's, like, certain areas where I'm like, oh, my God. Like, just, it's so triggering. And then, you know, I moved back there because my husband's, like, for business. He wants to try it out and do all these things. So I'm like, okay, like, let's just move to maybe a different city. And we did that. And, you know, then my husband dies there. It's like, I don't
Let's take, for example, like,
go back.
We were in California last week. We had the opportunity to go on a date.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like a rare thing for us. And
that's a really good point right here.
We went to
Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah. Everybody loves cheesecake, right?
Yeah. And I was doing fine. Literally all day I was fine.
Yeah.
And the moment we walked in, like the weirdest
Yeah.
I don't even know how to explain it.
Well, and then do you want to tell them why?
Yeah. Like
ultimately we figured out
what was going on. But yeah, I was like, I mean, you could even tell, you're like, what's wrong? Like, I can tell, like, you're so off. And I was like at the point where I wanted to cry. Yeah. And I was like, I have no freaking idea what's happening to me. Like, I was doing okay. And then all of a sudden, you know, and then we're sitting there and I think you were like talking to me or saying something. And I was like, oh my God, I figured it out. And then the freaking table we're sitting at in the bar was directly right next to a high top table that I went to with Eric on my last birthday that he was alive.
Same restaurant.
Same exact restaurant in California.
Yeah.
Same exact, we're literally sitting next to that bar top. And the reason I realized was because I turned around and there's this cute couple sitting at that bar top.
A guy and a girl, yeah.
In exactly the same seats that Eric and I were sitting at. And
I
literally got like a flashback, and then I was like, oh my God, like this is why I'm feeling this way. Yeah. And that's another thing, like, you know, even if your mind doesn't remember, your body does. Because I started feeling like crap before that. I even knew why.
Yeah. And it was before we even, like, walked into the restaurant. I could tell something was up.
Oh, my gosh, what's going on? Like, it was so weird. Yeah, so it's just should have gone to Yard House.
Damn it.
Dang it. I've gone there with him, too. But no, but it being just, like, the last, you know, birthday that I've ever... spend with him, like birthday dinner that I had with him, and it was like, you know, just us two, a date, and yeah. So it's just crazy how you remember these things and your body remembers these things and how bad it affects you, you know.
Yeah. I think for a lot of widowed people too, like there are times throughout the year where your body feels it.
Yes.
And not just widowed people, I should say just grievers in general. It's certainly because we're widows, we see it from that perspective. But I know, like, my family says the same thing often when there's a birthday coming up, or there's a big event, or there's a graduation, or a dance show, or any sort of thing that reminds them, like, their person is gone.
Yep.
You know, that is a huge trigger, and sometimes it's not as evident.
No.
Before it happens.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I remember the first death anniversary. That was really bad. I just wanted to be, like, alone. I didn't want to be with the kids. I wanted to be by myself. I wanted to be by the beach, you know, somewhere Eric loved. And I did that. So my parents watched the kids. And when I came back, they were too young. But we didn't tell them, like, oh, this is the day Dad died, you know. So they didn't even know anything about a death anniversary.
Yeah.
I came back and my mom was like, I'm not kidding you. The moment they woke up to the moment they went to bed, they were all off. So off, like, so weird, like, crying about everything, fighting about everything, and they didn't know why.
Mm.
And I was like, that's so crazy. She's like, I know it's because of this day.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But they don't even know that it's because of this day, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's
crazy.
When people, like, I truly do believe that our bodies hold on to, like, you know, dates and memories and all this stuff. And yeah, but yeah, it's true. Like, certain times around, let's take me, for example, like about a month ago, I was freaking probably not fun to be around for weeks. And it was Eric's death anniversary. It was around that time. That was really bad. Like, I remember telling you that I was having scary thoughts. Like, I was scared to be in my head because I was like going back to, like, not suicidal thoughts, but like thoughts of like, man, I just wish, like, this bus would run into me and, like, you know, like, not me killing myself, but, like...
That's the same thing.
No, but, like, not me doing it. Like, you know, like, before I freaking tried to kill myself. But, yeah, like, this time is, like, you know, like, there's a word for that. I can't remember what it's called. But, you know, like, wishing something bad to happen to you. Because I couldn't do it to myself, especially now, like, with kids. I don't know. But, yeah, so it got to that point. And I think I told you that my mind was a scary place.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks.
How do you feel right now? Because Eric's birthday is in 2 weeks.
Yeah, Eric's birthday is in 2 weeks. I don't know.
Did that just trigger you?
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. No, you didn't. I don't know. Like, even last year on his birthday, well, the two birthdays that I've been without him, I feel like, you know, the first one we kind of just went out and celebrated, and last year too, so it wasn't that bad for me.
It's not as big of a triggery day.
I don't know why. I mean, we'll see in 2 weeks, but also I feel like everything is so close together, you know? Like, he died, and then it was Easter, and then it's Mother's Day, and then it's his birthday. Like, I had clumps of everything, like, right there, so maybe by the time I got to his birthday, I was like, you know, I don't know.
You're already cried out.
Yeah, and, like, the kids get so excited. We buy a cake for him. Like, we sing to him and stuff, and we just... I don't know, but we'll see how it goes. Right now I feel okay, but maybe that's just because for the last month I've been feeling not okay. It's weird. But I did have someone ask me, how does Kevin handle it? Like, when you, because I'm open about, you know, when I'm really freaking struggling. Someone was like, so how does he, like, handle it when you're in these, what do you call them?
I just lock her in the bathroom.
Yeah, and he, like, slides me like food under the door
under every the door.
Once in a while. Yeah. And I drink the toilet water. No. How do you feel when I'm, you know?
It is not easy.
Yeah.
I will say. I think that I understand why you're feeling the way you are, which helps me to be more compassionate and empathetic towards you. Sometimes I find myself, like, slipping. I'm like, oh, man, like, what the hell's wrong with her? You know, in my mind, I'm like, oh, but wait, she's like going through the exact same thing I go through.
Yeah.
You know, so I have to remind myself that, like,
it's hard.
Well, and it's just, yes, it's hard, but it's not about me. It's, you know, we do that all the time where, like, if we're, you know, if you're in a relationship or whatever and things aren't going great for a period of time, you're like, oh man, like, what did I do? Is it me? Is it... Da, da, da? You know, like, you try to find blame. And in reality, there's nowhere to put this.
Yeah.
There isn't. Like, it just is. And it's something that happened, and our body and mind will react to it in whatever way we want it to. You know? Or sometimes it's even out of our control.
Yeah.
So I just... I try to remember that you know, you need space to grieve, and I try to be supportive, and I don't know, give you a little bit of extra room.
Yeah.
I don't know, what else?
I think that's it, really. Like, you don't...
I don't want to pressure you.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, you really... I mean, you just kind of give me my space. You don't, like, make me feel bad for it. Like, I feel like you just know, you know? Like, even especially, like, when the kids are home, and I'm just, like... not doing good, I literally don't even have to say anything to you. I think, like, I just go into the room and then I come out and, like, bedtime's done, you know? Like, it's not like a...
Yeah, well, there was one the other day where you weren't in a good place, and I think you had gone to the bedroom, and Riley and Emmy, I want to say, were like, where's mom? Where's mom? You know, I'm like, oh, mom's not feeling good. She's asleep.
Yeah.
No, I don't know if you were asleep. I just lied. But
Parenting 101.
That's right. but I just told him, I was like, you were asleep, you know, you're not feeling good or whatever.
Yeah. And
there was several times where Riley turned the corner to the bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, Riley, where are you going? She's like, going to mom, you know, she's on a mission. And I was like, oh, leave mommy alone. She needs to get some rest, you know, and... So just trying to, like, keep them off of you for a little while, even though, like, I know you would never turn them away, but it's just...
Yeah, that's... We need our space. The next morning when she woke up, she's like, you're not... I went to go take her out. She's like, you're not sick anymore? She was like...
That's funny. She said that. That's really funny.
I was like, oh my gosh, you're so cute. But yeah, it's difficult, especially, you know, with kids. You have to take care of them, but I will say it's nice to... have a partner, you know, to sometimes be like, help me. Help me when I'm drowning. Yeah.
Love you.
Love you. So how would you say that your mental health changed after Nick died?
Oh, dramatically. I mean, I had been conscious of, like, how much I struggled. But I would, up until that point, I would have never said, like, oh, I have clinical depression or I have, you know, anxiety disorder or anything like that. I would just said, you know, I had some traumatic things. I would maybe say that I had PTSD. After she died, I guess I kind of let myself struggle for, like, a year before I went to a doctor. I remember talking to some maybe it was some of my friends or something. I can't remember who it was, but they're like, yeah, you need to go, like...
Get help.
You need to go, like, see if you can get antidepressants.
Yeah.
Because, like, I was in a really dark place, you know? And I could tell, like, it was interesting because I would say certain things to my friends and they'd be like, you know? They'd give you that face of, like, oh,
what's wrong with him? Were you the problem or were they the problem because they don't understand dark humor?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's definitely a little bit of that. But but they always, like, my buddies always have had my best interest in mind, and my family, too. So I eventually went, like, I had to find a doctor. I didn't have a doctor at the time. And go through that whole thing where you're, like, going to the first visit. And, like, I have, like, an agenda in my mind that I need to accomplish with this person. And that took a while.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, let's talk about going to therapy. Let's talk about doing this. I'm like, okay, I'm already done. Already going to therapy. I've already done this. You know,
yeah.
Can we just get to the meds now, please?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
And I had never taken any sort of antidepressants, anti-anxiety. That was anxiety provoking.
Yeah.
Like, I did not want to do that.
Yeah.
I thought, I had heard horror stories of people. I'd had patients of mine.
Yeah.
Previously that were, like, on so many psych meds and just whacked out of their brains, you know, like, I just didn't want to end up like that.
Yeah.
You know? And, but at the same time, like, each person is unique. Each situation's unique. Mm-hmm. And, I had to just kind of put my trust into my doctor and just take her word for it. So after about a year, I went on an antidepressant at a very low dose.
Mm-hmm.
What I had noticed prior to starting the meds was that I was having anxiety attacks.
Mm-hmm.
I was just having really high anxiety, and I had gone back to work, and stress was high. Kids, I was a single parent, and just lots going on in life, and I could not handle it anymore, you know. So I needed help, and after I started taking that, you know, it takes about a month or so to get the levels right in your brain, and the anxiety kind of subsided and emotional regulation came back and I was able to sort of manage more.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say like it took it away, but it made it more manageable.
Like help you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I waited like probably around the same time. For the same reason, you know, I'm like, my husband just died. Like, obviously I'm supposed to feel like this.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not supposed to feel...
Yeah. At one point, my doctor was like, well, yeah, your wife just died.
Yeah.
Like, give yourself some time to grieve, and we'll talk about the meds later.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's...
Okay.
Yeah. I think I remember, like, I had a couple people, too, after a while, that were like, you need to go to the doctor, like, you know? And I'm like, my husband's dead. I don't know. Like, I
don't want to go anywhere.
I don't want... Yeah. And, like, let's talk about that. Like, how many times did I actually, like, make an appointment and not go? And I feel like that's so common for people that do struggle with depression and, like, anything mental health because, I mean, it's freaking hard. Like, we're not lazy. Like, we're not lazy just laying in bed all day because we're lazy. Like, we physically can't fucking do it. Like, there's something in our mind that's, like...
Well, it's a chemical imbalance in your brain,
So it's like you do all these things, you make the appointment, and then, you know, the day of, like, you don't even call in to cancel. Like, I didn't. I think I did that happen to me 4 times before I actually made it into the doctor.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't care if you charge me a fee. I don't care. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm not showing up. Just not going.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I did, and then, I, like, got back on my meds. And then the whole therapy thing, like...
That's hard.
Oh, it's so hard. And it was so weird because I am so, like, pro-therapy. I love therapy. I love therapy, and I knew that it would work because after my attempt in 2014... Yes. I was hospitalized and, like, put on a psychiatric hold and all this stuff, and... You know, when you get out, you have to, like, make a plan. Like, they make a plan for you. You have to see these doctors and therapists. Like, it's part of the whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. And it, like, I did therapy for years. I did EMDR therapy, which was so good and so intense. Like, I love it so much.
Yeah.
But at that point in my life, I was, what, 20? I think I was 20. When I went to therapy, there was really only, like, one or two topics, like, traumatic events that happened to me. So, you know, like, I'm just talking about, like, basically it was just, like, sexual abuse as a child was my number one trauma. And how that affected certain things, you know, in my life. And that's what we worked through with EMDR and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and it helped. It really helped so much. So then fast forward 10, 11 years later, and Eric dies, and I'm going to therapy, and I'm like, holy shit, I have to tell you my life story from, like, 30 years of my life. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like, where do I even start?
You've said that so many times,
Like, I don't even know where to start. Where do I begin? I need hours just for my intake session for you to understand what I'm going through. Because now it's not only the sexual trauma, abuse trauma that I have from childhood, because I feel like that's kind of worked through already, but then it's coming back now because my children are the age I was when I was abused. So now it's, I see it all the time. It's always coming back to me. And so there's that. And then there's, I, you know, like, my husband was an addict. There's me finding him, like, finding his drugs. There's me, like, going through that marriage, just fucking trauma after trauma after trauma, you know. And I don't mean it in a bad way. Like, it was a good marriage. But I mean, like, the parts of, like, I didn't know anything about drugs.
Yeah, the bad parts.
I knew absolutely nothing. So all of that was, like, new to me.
Sure.
And I'm pregnant. And I have, like, high-risk pregnancies, you know, and then my husband dies, and now I'm, you know, trying to parent three kids, and I want to die, you know, like, so where do you want me to start? You know, like, I didn't want to redo that every single time. So after Eric died, I just went to my fourth therapist, and I like her now, so maybe I'll keep going, but at one point, I went to one therapist, I think I told you this, and I told her, like, I mean, I had gone for, like, maybe a month or two, and then I said something about fentanyl. She's like, what is that? And I was like, what the fuck am I doing here? You don't know what fentanyl is?
Wow.
Like, yeah, and I didn't go back. I was like, okay.
Like, the number one killer
another,
in the U.S. now. Like,
yeah.
Crazy.
So, yeah. So I understand why people say therapy is so hard, you know, because 20-year-old me, I was like, okay, I don't have, like, that much. Like, I have trauma, but it's, like, one thing, let me talk about it. But, you know, when you've gone through so much shit in your life, and it's, like, not things you want to relive, but you kind of have to when you're in therapy, it takes a lot. It
takes a lot out of you. Yeah, it takes a lot of energy to do it.
So much.
And I will say, you really have to have the right person on the other side of the room to listen to you and give you feedback and help guide you through decisions. And if you're doing trauma therapy like EMDR, that's a whole nother thing. Like, I will say, like, you know, plug for EMDR if you have a lot of trauma that you need to work through.
I love EMDR.
It's weird. I will say, like, it was very strange for me to do it. It's different.
It's very different. And also, like, how we just said that therapy is, like, it takes a lot out of you. EMDR takes...
Yeah, you'll be tired after.
Like, you could be out for
a
while. Because it, like, it brings back memories.
Talk about your body feeling stuff and go to EMDR. And your body's going to feel it for a while. But
but it's so
ultimately
healing. So healing.
Speak just on that topic, like, after I did EMDR, the issue that I was having was I was replaying certain events in my mind over and over and over and over again and couldn't stop.
Yeah.
And that was causing me to have high anxiety. That was causing me to have emotional outbursts and really struggle to manage myself and impacts relationships and everything, like everything.
Yeah.
So I told my therapist, and my therapist just happened to be an EMDR person too. Mm-hmm. So I tried it. And really helped me to categorize in detail each part of the traumatic event. And at the beginning, I could pick one event from start to finish. And I could mentally walk through that event, and it was really difficult, and would cry and just break down and really be struggling. By the end of it, and the way that they do EMDR, I was able to compartmentalize a lot of it and to help myself find a way to, I guess, live with the trauma of that event. And that was powerful.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't take it away.
No.
Just it's a tool that you can use to help train your brain.
Yeah.
To deal with the aftermath of trauma. Yeah.
And the weird thing about EMDR too is like all these memories, like you're talking about a certain subject and then you're like, okay, replaying it in your head and you like literally remember every freaking detail.
Yeah. And it's wild.
It's so weird because you don't, like, you know, when you're thinking of this trauma or this memory, you're not thinking of like every like intimate detail. And the way you can do that, like,
yeah, it's crazy because it's like in your brain.
So crazy. And like, I often think, you know, like, for example, like the kids are young, right? Like Emmy's 6, but when she was 5, I was like, she's not going to remember, like, you know, this stuff, like she's young. Like, I don't even know if I like really remember before kindergarten. And then I go to EMDR and I'm literally a 5-year-old girl.
Yeah.
You know, having these things done to me, and I'm literally like, it's an out of body experience. I'm literally watching step by step. It's
same,
very triggering, but like, our brain remembers all that.
Yeah,
it's just like, yeah.
We've talked about this before, but like, it is so wild to me that in these traumatic events, you just mentioned it, we're almost watching it happen. Yeah. When you're going through the therapy.
Yeah.
For me, and sounds like for you too, I was watching it as a third person.
Yeah.
I was watching myself. I was watching the other people there.
Yeah.
And that was crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Once I realized what was happening.
Yeah. But so almost like empowering, because it's like, you know, I think that's what it was for me, is like, this isn't my fault. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like I don't, not saying that I ever thought it was my fault, but you know, it's more of like a no, like you did this, you're the problem, you did this to the, you know, like it was kind of empowering. Like, I know what happened. Like, you're not, you know, I don't know, gonna like manipulate me or.
Yeah.
So yeah, EMDR, intense, but I do like it.
Intense, but good.
I think I need a few, maybe a year or two before I do EMDR about.
What types of therapy have you done, or trauma therapy?
EMDR. Mm-hmm. That's really it. And then just like talk therapy. The one that I just started going to, she's a, what did I tell you she is?
Did she do CBT?
What's that?
Cognitive behavioral therapy.
Cognitive behavioral therapy. And I really like her. What did I tell you when I told you I knew she was the one? Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
It's like she made a dark humor joke.
Oh, yeah.
And she laughed. And I was like, I like you. And this last week I went to, and she did it again with something else. I was like, man, you are my people.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But it's hard. Like, you know, I think that's one thing. If I would say anything about therapy to anyone out there struggling, is you're not going to find the right one on the first try.
You might
like I did when I was 20. That's why this time around I was like, what's happening, you know? Why is it taking totally me so long? But yeah, just keep trying. It's freaking hard. I know it's hard. It's so hard, you know, especially when you can't even like get out of bed or do anything. It sucks. So I want to talk about also children's mental health.
Oh yeah, good idea.
Because I feel like, you know, that's not really a thing in a lot of people's minds. You know, they're just kids, they'll get over it, or you know, they're just kids,
they're resilient.
They're so
how many resilient. Times have I heard that?
Oh, I hate that so much.
Yeah.
Oh, your kids will that's be like okay. They're so resilient, they're so young. It's like, yeah, but they won't
happen. Everything happens for a reason. That's the same thing.
Get me started.
Insert eye roll.
Yeah, don't get me started. Goodness gracious. Okay,
so kids.
Yeah, kids that are so resilient.
That is one area that I really struggled with. I'll say just flat out, the hardest thing about losing my wife has been
having kids.
Yeah. And raising them, yes, but dealing with their emotions and grief and how to do that.
Because
you really are, I mean, both of our kids are very young when their parents died, but like when they're that young, there are no resources.
Yeah.
Zero.
And that's what sucks, is like, that was the number one thing I hated about the "there's a so resilient" comment, because like, does everyone think that they don't need help? Because it's so impossible to find.
Yeah, at home you see the impact, and some kids have behavioral issues at school and some have learning issues. My kids definitely did. my oldest for sure. Which actually this school year has been really fun to see her
thriving.
Like, holy cow.
She's
really thriving.
She's, yeah.
Rock star status.
Yeah.
So that's been fun. But for the previous like 4 years, it's been a struggle.
Yeah.
Struggle.
Well, and because she literally just started kindergarten as her mom was dying.
Yeah. She went to her first day of like in-person kindergarten the week before her mom died.
Yeah, so of course, you know, yeah. It's gonna be...
She's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
Yeah, what do we do? What do we do with them?
Yeah, what do we do with them?
How do you help them?
I don't know. I don't even know how to help myself.
Yeah, you do.
I don't know, man. It's hard. It's really hard because I feel like probably a lot of grieving parents or like widows can probably relate if they have kids. You know, like something happens and you're like, well, like, is it because their dad's dead or is it because they're five? You know, like,
yeah.
It's like, are they doing this because of that? Or, like, are they doing this just because they're a little shit? You know, like...
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's hard.
It's so hard to, like... And for a long time after Eric died, I remember any time Emmy would do anything that would get her in trouble, she would use the excuse of, oh, I want daddy. I just miss my daddy, you know? Mm-hmm. And at first, like, obviously, like, I do feel for her, but it's like, it got to the point where I could tell she was using that as a, I can't get in trouble because my dad's dead type of thing. Like, mm-hmm. Don't be mean to me.
Yeah.
So I think that's hard right now. Cause it's like, you know, like just how we have our days, kids have their days, but they don't really know how to verbalize that.
Yeah.
So it's hard. It's really hard. That part's a struggle for me. Also we have 5 grieving kids in one house. It's hard.
Whose plan was that?
I don't know, but man, that's something.
Yeah. I think one thing that's been really helpful for the older kids, by older, I mean like 10 and under,
mm-hmm.
right?
There's 6, 7, and 10.
6, 7, and 10, yeah. So we go to a grief group.
Yes.
Every other Thursday.
Yes.
And that is hosted by a local
hospice
center.
Yeah.
And in our previous town, we did the same thing, mm-hmm. through the same type of facility.
Yeah.
So I think a hospice generally has some sort of bereavement program.
Yeah.
This one happened to have a kids focused one, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's nice.
And they do it by age range.
Yeah.
So you're paired up with kids that are your similar age.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, the parents have their own group.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I've gone to a lot of grief groups over the years.
Yeah.
A lot. Even before Nick died.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't super excited about that.
Yeah.
Still now, like, yeah. I don't really look forward to it a whole lot. Yeah. But I will say, like, every time I go, I come away, like...
Afterwards, you're like, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, like it was good.
You don't want to.
It was a positive experience.
Yeah.
And I think if my kids weren't mentally in the place that they're at now, and we weren't going there, I wouldn't miss it. You know,
yeah.
I don't need to be there.
Yeah.
But I'm there because my kids need to be there.
Right.
And I think a lot of the parents are in the same boat.
Yeah, definitely.
Particularly the ones who are a little bit further out,
yeah.
from the death of their, you know, loved one.
Yeah.
It's not the group that we're in isn't just parents. There's a lot of other deaths in there.
Yeah.
Siblings and parents and close friends and close family.
Yeah, I do like that group, and it seems like they do like it.
They love it. They asked this morning if they were going to group.
Yeah.
So that's the first time that's happened.
Which is really cute, and I think that goes back to, like, I mean, we've talked about this before, how they kind of feel like the odd man out in certain, like,
true.
Places, and I think, you know, they go to this grief group, and they're finally like, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one with a dead person, you mm-hmm. know, like, these kids are just like me, you know, like, So yeah, they like it. They, I mean, I see Emmy and she like actually like talks and like, you know, and I have her teacher at school she's telling me excited. Like, she doesn't even, she's so quiet. Like she, this and that. And I'm like, she's not though.
Yeah. She's so, a motor mouth, man. Yeah. That kid can talk.
And then at grief group, she is talking and I'm like, it's just, I don't know.
It's just where she feels safe.
Yeah. Safe right? place.
So.
Yeah.
I, as you were talking, a thought came into my mind of, after Nick died, obviously, I had to tell the school what was going on. Mm-hmm. And they knew that she was sick. And Holland's teacher, Holland's my oldest daughter, she was very sensitive to what was happening and was prepared for it to happen.
Yeah.
And so the school, like, kind of rallied around us and gave Holland the resources she needed. They dropped off packets of homework at our house, you know, that she could work on whenever she wanted to. And she was out of school for a while, you know, and they just kept her moving along, you know. And then when she came back to school, whenever it was appropriate, the school counselor actually started a grief group for the kids. Aww. And not just my kids. There were, which when you brought up the kids being around other kids who are grieving, that was big, I think, for Holland at the time.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just her, but her good friend walked into the group as well. Aww. And she had just lost her, I think it was her aunt that had died. And I remember her coming home. She's like, Dad, Mia's in the group too. And she was like, it's weird to be excited about that, but
like I'm not the only one.
She could totally relate. And then I think Mia had gone home and told her parents, and her parents came to me and were like, I'm so thankful that they are in this group together and that they have each other.
Yeah.
And they just lived around the corner from us. So it was like,
it was nice.
Insta friends, you know? Yeah. Like, it was just great.
Yeah. And I think that's great when schools actually do have like resources like that. Like Jory, she watched her friend die in front of her. You know, they were riding their bikes together.
That's
and
right.
And her friend got hit by a car and she died. And she was a child when this happened. And she's mentioned to me so many times that there was this counselor at school, you know, that she could go to. She'd have lunch with her, like, when she, you know, like, talked to her about anything. And it's such a positive impact in her life because, you know, she's 30 now and she still remembers that, you know, like, how that made her feel and the impact that had on her. So I think, you know, schools having good resources is such a big thing, too.
Yep.
You know, like, there's only so much we can do here as parents. And I feel like for kids, it's always nice to talk to someone that's not mom or dad, you know? Like, even though we are quite open with them.
Oh, it's massively important, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, I think another big thing with, like, kids is talking about your feelings, you know? Like, I feel like maybe that's a little newer to this generation of parents where we, like, actually dive deep into emotions and, like, talk about our feelings and, you know, like... Yeah.
How many nights have we been, like... up late with one kid or another, talking about how they're feeling and trying to get to a root cause of like how to help them and what's causing this emotion and
not trying to be not just like, okay, you're fine, like stop crying, just go to bed, you know, like that doesn't work.
We do that too, but I mean, we don't always have the parental energy to like do all this, but like when it's serious and you can tell that a kid is really struggling, we definitely try to talk to them, give them an outlet. And it's interesting to me to see who opens up to who, you know? And I've noticed Holland opens up to you a little bit differently than she opens up to me.
Yeah.
And, she'll be, you know, kind of a butthead some days. And, I sit down on the couch after bedtime and I'm like, what is her deal?
Yeah.
And then I remember one time you were like, oh yeah, her friend, this and that, and like something happened at school and she's really upset about this. And I'm like, how do you know all this? And then that makes me feel like shit. Cause I'm like, I've been hard on her because she's being a little punk.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause so. I just went in there and I laid with her and we were just talking for a while. And she was telling me, you know, all these things. And it's hard too, cause she's getting to the age, like preteen age. And you know, I she struggles.
Hormones are going crazy.
You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, she's sad. She's a sad girl. Her mom's not here. And I think that that's another thing that I can kind of relate with, because I was a sad girl. You know, like I had my parents, but I was, you know, definitely dealing with demons in my mind. And I feel like, you know, being able to relate is nice.
Yeah, I try to give them a safe space to just say whatever they want to say.
Yeah.
I don't even care if it's true. Like, just say what you want to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And get it off your chest and just express yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one other thing with the kids and giving them a safe space to talk has been, and to one step further with our kids' school, has just been how invested they are in mental health.
Yeah.
And I've been very pleased with the way that the school has stepped up.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of attention on children and mental health right now.
Yeah.
There's, I think, a lot of attention on pediatric suicide and...
As there should be.
As there should be. And bullying and all of this stuff that happens at school that, you know, same when we grew up, but like... It's just more intense now with social media and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I didn't, you did, but I didn't have that when I was growing up.
I maybe in high school, yeah.
I was
I'm old. Maybe after high school. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, yeah, I couldn't imagine being a kid right now or a teenager right now, you know, with all these internet bullies and just, you know, like, you know, trying to,
Yeah. I mean, my kids go to school, and on Thursdays they have a therapist, an actual licensed therapist that comes from an outside office and has therapy with them for an hour.
Comes out of class for an hour, has therapy with them. They go back to class.
And the school makes it work.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. I love that. I think every single school should have that, if only they could, right?
Yeah, it comes down to funding, I think.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
And a desire to do it, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's really important, you know, to... When it comes to children's mental health, they're struggling too, you know? Like, I think it's really important for people to know, like, yeah, they can be... You know, sometimes kids do shitty things to piss you off, but, like, they can be struggling too. They're not as resilient as we... think they are.
Right.
Like, they need help and love and support.
They do.
So, yeah. I think that's the end of my mental health conversation. Would you want to throw anything else in there?
No, I just would say, just in support of what we've already talked about, just if you need help, talk to somebody.
Yeah.
If you can't afford it, there are resources out there for free.
Yeah.
Mental health care.
Yeah.
And, take advantage of what you can get, because something is better than nothing.
Yeah. And that is so true. You know, like, therapy is so expensive. Like, what about the people that don't have money or don't have insurance? Like, where do you know anywhere they could, like, any resources where they can go to find something?
There's a bunch of nonprofit groups that offer therapy for free. I know... Cancer Support Center is a national group that they offer therapy and group therapy. Group therapy is free, and you can go as long as you want. They have different groups for different reasons. And there are the option to do individual therapy with a licensed therapist or an associate who's getting their license. I will say, just total honesty, I did do that after Nick died, and the downside of doing the individual therapy with, like, an associate is that once they get their hours, they're gone.
Yeah.
And they typically go into private practice on their own.
Yeah.
And you can't always follow them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you don't have insurance, there are limitations. But most therapists nowadays are cash pay.
Yep.
There are some that take insurance, but I would leverage some of these nonprofit groups that work with bereaved families, hospice centers, social workers at hospitals typically have a lot of resources that they can provide. So if that's an interaction that you've had through your loved one's death, then I would leverage that too. And then I would also say that the state, typically most states will have like a Department of Mental Health. Mm-hmm. And you can look on there, and there's usually some resources of free or low cost care.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Thank you. Well, I also just want to say for anyone out there that is struggling or feeling like the world would be better off without them, it wouldn't. It would not. I don't want to cry, but...
I'm glad you're still here.
Thank you. So am I. And I'm glad you are all still here. I know how dark minds can be, and... yeah, don't listen. Don't listen to the... It's playing tricks on you. Your mind plays tricks on you.
Yeah.
It'll be dark.
I listened to a podcast the other day. Funny. And this guy was saying... I don't even remember who it was, to be honest with you. Might have been like... What's his name? The funny dude who wears sunglasses on his podcast.
Funny dude wears sunglasses.
Theo Vaughn or something like that.
Oh. Yeah.
What's his name?
Theo Vaughn.
Theo Vaughn, right?
I think.
The real world guy?
I think.
Yeah. Anyway. So, I was listening to the podcast... And he was like, your mind will lie to you.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Your mind will lie to you.
Yep.
And you have to have the ability to recognize that and shift your thinking.
Yeah, which is so hard.
It's very difficult, and it is a skill that's learned.
Yeah, definitely need to, it's hard, but, it's definitely playing tricks on you.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're still here, I'm happy you're here. Hope you guys stick around a lot longer. Also, I want to throw out there, if you are feeling suicidal or really need any sort of mental health help, you can call 988 or you can even text them. Yeah. I've done that before when I was going through an ordeal with Eric.
Mm-hmm.
I text them and it's, you know... There is someone out there on the other line helping you out. So if you ever get to that point, you can always just dial or text 988.
Yeah.
And that'll hopefully help you out.
Yep.
All right, guys. Thanks for hanging out with us today. And if you know anyone that is struggling with their mental health, give them the biggest hug and just show your support and let them know that you are there for them when they need it. If you want to continue to be a part of these conversations, please like...
Share,
subscribe,
comment,
all the things.
All of them.
And don't forget, just for today, keep going.